Hello, my name is Karen Guglielmo, the editor of SearchCIO.com, and I'd like to welcome you to today's expert podcast on email archiving. I'm joined today by Mark Diamond. Mark is one of the industry thought leaders in email archiving, compliance, storage, data protection, and ILM strategies and practices. As CEO of Contoral, his company helps numerous Fortune 500 companies develop email archive policies and strategies. A frequent industry speaker, Mark addresses how organizations can better align business requirements with IT and storage spending. Today, Mark is joining us to talk about the legal ramifications of email archiving and how they impact your IT strategy. Welcome, Mark.
Hello, Karen. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. As I mentioned earlier, we're here today to talk about email archiving. But before we begin our Q&A session, can you give our audience a brief overview on email archiving and why it should be a priority? Also, tell your if you could tell our audience a little bit about Contoral and what you do there.
Sure. Thank you very much, Karen. So we're an independent business and technology consulting firm, and what we do is we help large organizations understand what information they need to save, what email, electronic documents, other type of data they need to save, what they don't need to save, and help them develop effective IT strategies for executing that. The whole area of email archiving has really gotten a lot of interest within the last few years, and a number of businesses are beginning to look at this. And this is really driven, in our opinion, by five different drivers. The first one, and is surprisingly not the biggest, tends to be compliance. There are a number of new and existing regulations that are beginning to recognize email and other electronic documents as business records that need to be retained. The problem with compliance, however, is that while some of the regulations are fairly prescriptive, they tell you exactly what you need and how you need to do it, unfortunately, many of the regulations tend to be very non-prescriptive. Sarbanes-Oxley is a classic example. The Sarbanes-Oxley will tell you all the bad things will happen to you if you don't do something. But it won't tell you specifically, at least in terms of email and electronic documents, what you need to save. And we expect the case law to evolve over the next two or three years. But in our opinion, compliance is one of the drivers, but not always the biggest driver. The next driver tends to be data privacy. We see a lot of organizations that are concerned about data privacy, and this actually has an impact on email because sometimes they receive emails from customers in other areas, and how they manage and how they save those emails can really significantly impact an IT strategy, and that's very important for companies to look at. Perhaps the biggest driver, though, in our experience, and we work with a number of companies helping them walk through these drivers, is litigation and litigation readiness. Increasingly, when companies get sued, the first thing that the opposing party goes after is the email. And the whole process of finding and retrieving and presenting those emails is becoming, quite frankly, a pretty large issue for companies and a huge issue for IT organizations. A lot of companies, interestingly, approach this from a compliance point of view, but in our experience, this whole idea of litigation and litigation readiness tends to probably be one of the biggest drivers. And again, your mileage may vary. The fourth driver, and this is important, this is oftentimes overlooked, especially when this is an issue addressed just by the legal department, is employee productivity. You know, email tends to be one of the most critical applications within an organization, and I can prove that by saying, what's the one application that it goes down, you got to bring up within seconds, and I'll argue in most organizations that tends to be email. And employees use email for productivity, and you have to factor that in your policies and your strategies. What we find is there's this whole area that employees will want to have their email and want to have access to it. And we've seen some companies, quite frankly, that put in very, very strict email retention policies that say, hey, we're not going to save any email whatsoever, sometimes find that employees are engaging in what we call underground archival, which means that they're saving their emails in, oftentimes against policy, either in PST files, or they're porting them home, or they're putting them in USB drives, or they're printing them out. But so when you look at this driver, you have to factor what employees are really going to do, and you have to make sure that your policies are real-world policies. The final area is cost, and you can't overlook this, is, you know, what investment is your organization willing to make in being able to save and manage these records? And quite frankly, what are the consequences or what are the potential costs if the organization doesn't? Many companies have unfortunately been through very difficult legal discovery processes against email. And a lot of times, quite frankly, a single really bad discovery process could have paid for an effective email archiving system, and companies learn after the fact. Our experience is these are probably the biggest five drivers driving email archiving. And when companies look at these issues, what they really need to do is go out and understand these issues, understand how it impacts, and get a balanced policy with all these different drivers. But equally important is to have a real-world policy that you can execute successfully. We believe, and we have found, that it's worse to have a policy you don't follow, because that creates significant issues when it comes to litigation readiness and compliance, versus no policy whatsoever. And so one of the things that we advise our clients when we work with them is make sure that you have something you can understand that's clear to the employees, and most important, you can execute from an IT perspective. Keep in mind that 96% of all the documents that come into an organization come in their source format and electronic format. And so while it's important to address the business drivers around this issue, at the end of the day, execution of email archiving, for that matter, enterprise document retention, is a large part an IT issue. The other driver that we're seeing, and this is one of the things that we advise our clients, is when you execute a policy, we have found that trying to create manual processes tend to be very difficult. You know, trying to have a quote-unquote compliance folder that everybody can drag their emails and put their email in a compliance folder, or trying to, you know, teach everybody to recognize Sarbanes-Oxley email. I mean, I could put a dozen Sarbanes-Oxley attorneys in the room and get 13 different opinions. Hence, trying to teach employees is pretty difficult around this area. So what we're seeing emerging as a best practice, and what we've seen work a number of times, is really trying to automate the process. That is, can we automatically collect emails? Can we retain them? Can we find them? And can we expire them appropriately, taking the human manual component out of it? That actually turns out to be more compliant, reduce risk, and quite frankly, cheaper in many cases, trying to set up an automatic system. And so that's really one of the big drivers from an IT perspective, is you have these changes going on, you have these new rules, et cetera, and companies are saying, let's do this a smart way. Let's put an automated process in place in terms of approaching this.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Great overview. Now, let's get started on our Q&A today and possibly address some of the questions and issues CIOs are facing on email archiving. First question I have for you, how do the new rules of federal procedures impact email and electronic documents?
Okay. It's actually the new rules of Federal Civil Procedure, FRCP. Those are some new rules that were put out by the Supreme Court that affect really discovery among the federal courts, although a number of the state courts often follow the lead in the federal courts. And although this is an amendment to the Federal Civil Procedure, in many respects, we consider this a clarification. And essentially what the Supreme Court has come out and said is a number of things. First of all, email is a business record that is discoverable. They're really reaffirming that. There's some good components to it. One of them is that they have sort of limited the ability for opposing counsel to do fishing expeditions. If the email is located in a place that's difficult to get to, maybe it's on a very old backup tape, they've limited the ability, although not excluded, the ability for opposing counsel to force you to go read those backup tapes. From an IT perspective, probably the biggest issue, however, and also from a legal perspective, is they have set the standard for a pretrial conference, which essentially means is that both sides need to present their documents relevant to a particular case at the very beginning of a litigation. You don't have a lot of time now to go and find a lot of documents and retrieve them and understand what you have. It's actually a very, very short amount of time. And for organizations that maybe find documents later under the new Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, there is a risk that these rules will, these emails may be inadmissible if you find them later. And so what it's prompting organizations to do is and companies, is to have a new concept that comes up, which is litigation readiness. when we get sued, can we find the stuff relatively quickly to make sure that we can have a lot of stuff that's defensible and can be able to support us? The other part of it, and there's a lot of different attributes of this, the other one which is interesting is that the statute, the new rules actually require that you be able to produce this information in its original source format. And so in email, to submit them in paper is unacceptable. You have to have them in electronic format and give that to the opposing party in electronic format. And so again, what we found is that litigation and litigation readiness has been a big driver for a lot of organizations taking a look at email and other types of archiving for a while. These new rules, which again went in place December 1st of last year, are really spurring companies to say, okay, now we really need to go out and do something about this.
It sounds like litigation readiness is a whole other topic that we could probably have a full discussion on at another point even.
Yeah, absolutely.
So my next question is, CIOs obviously want to avoid this issue, but they're still recovering from SOX compliance and other unfunded mandates. What advice would you have for them?
Well, and I can easily understand that. I mean, we're all recovering just from the days that, we have new compliance and new regulations. And I spent a lot of time talking to CIOs, and I often hear them say, you know, the last thing I want to do is sort of stick my head up and say, hey, is this the problem? Maybe I'm going to wait for legal or compliance or records management to come tell me there's an issue. And when I hear that, I say, be careful. I can understand why you're thinking that way, but be careful about this. First off, a lot of time lawyers, both in-house counsel and outside counsel, don't understand the technology. And a lot of times they think that maybe retrieving emails from backup tapes is really easy or other ways. Second of times, a lot of times they'll put policies together which are not easy to execute from an IT perspective. And the risk that you have in not participating in the discussion early is that potentially they're going to create something which is unsupportable from an IT perspective. Remember, I said that 96% of all documents are electronic format. If they have a policy that you can't support, it's not typically going to be the legal group that's spending their weekends reading backup tapes. It's going to be the IT groups. And so what I encourage CIOs is to participate in these discussions, educate the rest of the people in the organization about the different technologies, and make sure that the policies they create are supportable from an IT perspective. And it really behooves them to get involved early in the process.
Now, on the other side, how do you avoid saving damaging emails?
You know, that's a really good question. Some organizations have been through cases where emails have come up and they've been very hurtful and you've lost a case. Mm-hmm. You know, other organizations have been up there and been in stunned emails that have been essentially exonerated them or been able to make their case. And so we found cases where emails hurt you or emails help you. Unfortunately, the other thing we find is that it tends to be very difficult to delete email. You know, companies that have 30-day or even 15-day email deletion policies, what we find is that those policies don't actually delete email. What they do is they drive this idea of underground archival, meaning that people still save email, but just save it in the nooks and crannies of the IT infrastructure. You had one client that, for example, really got serious about mailbox management, and they said, hey, we're gonna clamp down on this, and we're going to limit mailbox management. They had a file server, though. It was a 100-terabyte file server that was supposed to last them 3 years, and in 6 months it was filled up. And what happened was everybody just stopped saving the mailbox and started saving as PST files on this file server. And so it's a bit like a tube of toothpaste. You squeeze one end, it goes to the other. So, what we say is make sure that your policies incorporate human behavior. Remember, some emails are going to be hurtful, some emails are going to be helpful, but what you don't want to do is have policies so strict that you actually drive underground archival, which forces you to spend more money discovering these or having potentially a limited supply, a limited context of emails come up that may be hurtful. And so, again, something you really need to talk about and socialize, but it's careful. You may think you may lead them, but oftentimes it can be difficult.
Yes, be careful, like you said, is probably the key phrase there. So for companies that are moving forward, do you see a trend in some companies in getting individual products for archiving email, files, databases, or even one product that does them all?
Well, that's a bit of the great debate right now. Up to this point, we've seen most organizations really go for, you know, best of breed. They maybe have one product for email archiving, one product for structured data, database archiving. Maybe they have a third product for file archiving or other things like that. And to date, part of the reason that's been driven is because the technology just hasn't been mature enough to be able to support. And this is very important. When you're implementing an email archiving system, scalability is a very important issue, because the last thing you want to do is set up email archiving that affects the performance, the reliability of the overall email system. I mean, that's email archiving can't take down the email system, and we've seen that. And so there's been a tendency to focus saying, I really want to get best of breed in this and focus on those single silo products. We're seeing some of the vendors, though. We're seeing the email vendors beginning to move in the file space, and some of the file space vendors move into the email space. Our prediction is in a number of years we're going to see single silo products. There's no clear recommendation we give today whether you have a single product or a single product that handles all data types or you have different products. It's really going to depend on your specific requirements, but it's something the company should look at and really understand those requirements in terms of how they approach it.
Well, are there any steps you can suggest companies take when approaching this problem and deciding which way to go?
Yeah, actually it's very important. The first thing that we recommend is make sure that you have a clear policy that you understand that you can execute. As I mentioned, that often involves engaging legal and records management and finance and IT. And, you know, sometimes you can say, trust me, time spent at the beginning of the process, understanding clearly and getting an agreement on what the business requirements tend to be fairly important. And that's time very, very well spent. What you don't want to do, and we've seen this a number of times, is have organizations that buy technology and then build a policy only to find out the technology they bought didn't fit what their policy was. So have a clear policy. Obviously, as you go through, look at a number of different vendors. When you deploy this stuff, one of the things that we recommend is you do this in a pilot basis. You don't want to do, you know, a big bang where you turn it on all overnight and have the whole thing start because of the scalability issue. The other best practice that we really recommend is make sure you set up some training and socialization. And this can have some good effects. So not only teach people how to use the email archiving system, sort of, if you will, sell the benefits of that. One of the things you may want to do, and one of the things oftentimes is once you set up an email archiving, we see a number of organizations that get rid of PSD files, which is a very valid way of approaching this. But also, you know, one of the things you may want to train your employees is to say, by the way, this is a corporate record. Every email that you send, the director of human resources can see and your boss can see. So make sure you respect this as the proper business communication that it is. Sometimes that kind of training can really drive good behavior. And you asked earlier, you know, how do we get rid of those hurtful emails or, you know, the bad emails? Well, quite frankly, the best way is to train people not to write them in the first place. And so as you deploy the system, make sure you go through that training process and socialize not only email archiving but your overall policy. And we found that to be very effective. At the end of the day, if you follow those steps, you're going to have something that's going to be compliant, that really it does allow you to be litigation ready. I do believe the technology is there. And quite frankly, it has a lot of benefits from an IT perspective.
And I actually have one final question for you. Would you say it's difficult for CIOs to get executive buy-in for email archiving systems, or is it, you know, a no-brainer?
Yeah, it can be challenging, in part because, and I'll go back, the reason it's difficult is a lot of times they focus on one or two of the drivers. They just focus on compliance, or they focus on litigation readiness. When we engage with our clients, it's quite frankly one of the most important things we do is we build this consensus across with them. We often will have a workshop for a day where we'll go through and we'll understand the drivers. Getting everybody on the same page tends to be very important. So, yes, sometimes that can be tricky, but don't forego that step because once you have that, the rest of it is fairly straightforward. If you don't have that consensus, if legal and compliance and all these different groups don't agree on how much you should save and how long you should save it, you're going to have a very difficult time supporting and implementing an email archiving system because obviously you won't have the requirements right up front.
Great. And on that note, that does conclude today's podcast. Thanks again to Mark Diamond for speaking with us. And thank you all for listening. Have a great day.